right, well, now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Kim.
Oh my gosh, stop it. Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Bill, for asking me. It's truly just an honor to be up here. It really is. Thank you. And, you know, I must admit, when Bill asked me to speak outside, I was, you know, honored, and I said, yes, of course, you know, I'd be happy to. You know, I've never been to the Creative Center because I have a current engagement that I go to on Wednesdays. So last week I thought I would go and, you know, just check it out and see how it was. So I walked in with my sponsor and I saw the big tables and the big podium up there. And I thought, oh my God. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, no big deal. I can get over the podium thing and, you know, a lot of people, not a big deal. So I sat at the table and Eric started speaking and I told Mandy, so people get up here to share after he's done for like 15 minutes. That's pretty nice. She goes, no, the speaker's 45 minutes. And I went, oh my God, I had a heart attack, didn't I? I really did. But anyway, I'm happy to be here. Like I said, I'm going to share my experience, strengths, and hopes, and hope that hopefully you get something out that you can walk away with and say, you know, I just might be able to do this. Well, I grew up a happy child, but I was kind of hurt and kind of devastated. My real dad, who was a truck driver, he kind of abandoned me. And okay, that was what, 2 minutes? Nice. Okay. He really wasn't a big part of my life, even though that, you know, I felt it in here that he was. But I'm telling you that because it you know, has something to do with my story. So I grew up and my stepdad adopted me. And I had a good childhood, but already I had just started off with a huge resentment towards my real dad. Huge resentment. Then I had, you know, resentment with, I felt jealous of my sister being my stepdad's real daughter. So I was unhappy within myself, but it was, you know, it was my doing, I know, my part. But I grew up I went to school, you know, grew up that way. Everything was fine. My parents at home didn't drink or anything like that. Weren't alcoholics. When I got into high school, I liked being out more than I liked being home. And I'm sure that's, you know, normal. I messed around. I tried a couple of things. I drank occasionally, but it wasn't ever a problem to where I had to continuously do it. So that was okay. But I was starting to have the male issues. I could never trust a male. I always felt like they were going to leave me. And that was all, you know, since the beginning. So then I got married to a wonderful man, young. I was 19. And then I had three beautiful children. After the first one, she was about one, and I was sick, and I was laying in bed, and the TV was on, and I thought, you know, what can I do to make myself feel better? Well, I already had something from the doctor on the side, so I was staring at that, and then I just washed it down with something nice, of course. So after that, that was it. That moment was just as clear as day. I could just taste it and I could feel it. And I thought, this is never something I'm going to let go. This would never abandon me. It will always be there for me. So what I needed was, you know, energy to raise my three girls And, you know, this got worse and worse, but it was always hidden from everybody. I tried to do my best to hide it. So I did this, you know, behind closed doors, and I did it for a while. I considered myself good at it, and I could just, you know, like, lead off the dogs, throw that scent, and I was going. You know, my expectations of myself and how I lived were tremendous. I mean, just, you know, perfect. I wanted to be perfect in every way. I wanted my kids to be raised perfect, and I needed the alcohol and, you know, the drugs play an important part of my story. So that helped me do everything. So I was, you know, I was your PTA president at work. I was the room mom. I was the soccer mom. I was everything, everything that I could do because I needed to be there for my kids. And even though that I was mind altered somewhat, I still got all that done. So, you know, I thought, well, you know, it's okay because it's helping me. It's helping me. You know, without this stuff, I can't function, and I needed to raise my family. So I justified it in every way I could. Did I think I needed help? Yeah. But was I going to say anything? No way. No way. I wasn't going to say anything and give up, you know, what I thought that I couldn't handle on my own. So, let's see, 20 years later, my kids are big. They're big and beautiful children that I'm so proud of. Then I decided, you know, to go back to school, and I wanted to become a nurse. So I went to school, and I worked really hard to become one. And I had the, you know, chemicals to help me study and pull all-nighters and still be that, you know, perfect human being that I thought I needed to be on the outside, however. So, you know, things went well. I got my degree. I started to work. And then I started to go back to school because I thought, well, that's not good enough. I need to be better than that, even better. So there's no end here. So while I was doing all that, my disease got really, really bad. And I started spiraling downhill really fast. And it was to the point where I needed so much stuff to wake up and so much stuff to put me to bed. And it was just consuming me. And it was all that I could think about. So it started affecting, you know, my job and my performance at work, and my boss pulled me aside. And this was about last summer. And I'm really close to her, really close. So I considered her like almost like, you know, a mom figure. So she pulled me in the office and she said, you know, all of us are really concerned. You're looking kind of, you know, like not close to us. You're disconnected. You're kind of, you know, kind of off a little bit. Are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. Things are fine. I'm great, you know. And she said, okay. She said, well, you know, I want you to know that you can come to me if you need anything. And I said, okay. I said, you know, I'm fine. She said, now, you know, if there's drugs or alcohol involved, we need you to come forward because we can help you. And I said, I don't need help. I can do this. You know, I've never asked anybody for help before. Why would I do that now? I don't want any help. She said, okay. She said, well, you know, this is your last chance. You could lose your job. And I again said, no, I don't want any help. So then as I'm standing up and I'm walking out the door with her, she grabbed my hand. And I looked in her eyes, and she had tears in her eyes also, and I said, yeah, I need help. I'm an alcoholic and an addict, real bad, and I need help. And she said, okay. So she said, okay, we're going to get you the help that you need. We're going to take care of you. Don't worry about it. We're going to get you the help you need. I said, well, what about my job? What about my family? What about my friends and my coworkers? Everybody's going to know. She said, well, you have to do that, darling, on your own and deal with all that. But number one is to find you a rehab. And I said, okay. So then I went home. I told my husband. I told my girls. I told my mom, my sister, about all the 20 years, the lies that I was living. And they were forgiving more than I can imagine. So I went to rehab. And, you know, I let go, but not completely. And that's, you know, the honest truth. I went there because, you know, I admitted I needed help, but I'll be honest, so it's kind of a resentful towards myself that I got caught. And I was thinking, how am I going to live without all this stuff? So I went to rehab and I was kind of upset and kind of pissed, and I was there. I did what they wanted me to do, but it kind of felt like camp because nobody was really serious. And I thought, well, God, everybody's just having fun, making friends, having sleepovers. We cook a meal. I mean, you know, no one was really dedicated, I must admit. Nobody. Nobody was. It wasn't on anybody's mind, and that's sad, isn't it? How sad. So I was on medication there to kind of mask the symptoms of my detox of both the alcohol and the drugs. So I told them, well, you know, being a nurse and everything, I said, I think I should stay on this medication for as long as I can because it's bad for my health, right? I didn't want to feel anything. So he kept me on it. And then the deal was for me to taper off so I could detox there and not at home. So, you know, kind of towards the end, I was still taking the same amount because I was talking to the girl that had my meds. And I knew how to get what I wanted. So I got what I wanted, and that was, you know, not tapering off. So, you know, the night before Thanksgiving, I called the house supervisor and I said, I want to go home. And she said, but it's not time yet. You're a week short. And I said, I don't care. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving and I want to go home. You know, nobody's taking care of my kids and my dogs miss me and my house. And see, I was already still in that frame of mind. I still wanted to be where I could control everything. And she said, okay. She said, I'll call your husband. And he's on the other end going, why is she coming home already? She still has a leave. So I said, well, give me that phone. So I said, you come pick me up right now. Come pick me up. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving. So he did. And he took me home. And I was so glad to be home. I had my suitcase out, though. I didn't unpack it yet. So the next day's Thanksgiving. And I woke up and I got ready and I started to feel something. And it was the storm coming. And I felt it. We went to my mom's for Thanksgiving and I started seeing double. And I started shaking and I felt sick. I was sweating. I felt something I'd never felt before, ever. Not ever. And I said, I'm sick. I laid in my mom's bed. We went to my in-laws. I laid on the back bed. I didn't want to see anybody. And then the next day it hit really hard. And for the next 2 weeks, I can't even explain to you what I went through. It was like shedding my skin. It was awful, awful. Like giving childbirth was fun to me compared to that. It was awful. I just stayed in my room. I'm serious. It was bad. It was so bad. It was so bad. My girls had to see that. My mom. my mom sat on my bed, and I told her that I didn't want to live anymore. I said, I give up. I said, I give up. I can't do this. I don't want to do it. I can't do this. I don't care about my career. I don't care about anything. I have one goal. I said, so, you know, I told her, I don't want to call the doctor and put me back on that shit that I was on, because I didn't want to feel what I was feeling. So she just told me, you know, you're not giving up. I won't let you. I won't let you. You don't know what you're saying. You don't know what you're saying. And this went on for days. And my kids took shifts. My husband, nobody let me out of their sight. I wasn't allowed to leave. I wasn't allowed to do anything. And that was good. Because had that been the case, I wouldn't have stayed. There's no way. There's no way. So, you know, doing that in a way humbled me greatly, because here was that perfect mom for 20 years that, you know, was detoxing from her bed and wanted to die. And that was where my disease took me. That bad. And, you know, from then on, girls, I'll always make, you know, I'll make a living amends to you guys for always being there, you guys. I will. But after that happened, I finished detoxing, and I got my packet in the mail to keep my career. Oh, my God, it was like 100 pages. And they wanted me to sign a 3-year contract, and it was so much and so overwhelming that, again, I wanted to not do it. But I thought, you know, it's all this stuff, you know, maybe it's just my consequences. It's the price I have to pay for what I did. So that's what I would think on the days that would pull me through, and that I would realize, you know, I wanted to keep my life. So after that, let's see, it was Christmas last year, and I was not feeling well. I was feeling like shit still. My body was still trying to adjust without all of that stuff in it, and it wasn't going well. I wasn't feeling it. I wasn't feeling Christmas. I couldn't do anything. I really couldn't. I couldn't do anything. And that hit me because, again, I wanted, you know, I know this thing, I wanted everything to be perfect and have that, you know, Norman Rockwell Christmas and everything. So I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll take a little something to kind of help me buy all those gifts in one evening. So I took a couple of, you know, things, alcohol included, and it made me feel good. It made me feel good. It brought back all of those good feelings, and that was about a week. And then I got a grace, and then I thought, well, you know, maybe there is something to that program. I got to go start going to meetings anyway, so I'm going to start going to my meetings, and I'll get the big book and the sponsor and do all that stuff and, you know, see if that helps me. So then that's when I started coming to, no, Mammy's not yet. That's when I went, I came to the club, and I was still great at what I did, was to manipulate everything, because I thought, well, this is the closest meeting to my house, and it's the earliest, so it won't disrupt my day. So I'll come to this meeting, and once I got into it, I thought, well, it's, what, a 45-minute meeting? The other ones are an hour. So that saves me 15 minutes right there. So I came here, and then, you know, I sneak in right before the basket was, and I sat right back there, and I got my headphones, and I watched a movie. How's that? I watched a movie. I mean, that was pitiful. Really? Really. I mean, it makes me sick when I just think about it. I'd watched the movie. I wouldn't hear what anyone had to say. I was just like, you know, get me out of here. Get me out of here. I can't relate with anybody. Nobody has my story. Who has my story? And I don't want to make friends with anybody. So don't introduce yourself. Don't say hi. And then, you know, they still remind me that, you know, they tried, but that I was so fierce looking, they just gave up and I scared them. But you tried. And I'm sorry for that. You know, I think back and remember that. So, you know, after a while, I did that and I found myself a sponsor. And I got the big book and I started just half-assing everything. You know, half-assing. I barely called her when I had issues. I was reading the big book, but, you know, I wasn't absorbing anything. My meetings were still, you know, I was getting better, but I was still spacing out. I wasn't taking anything home. I wasn't praying. Wasn't doing anything. I was just like, you know, it seems to be working. I've got a couple of months sober, and I don't think I'm going to be okay. I think so. So then here comes May of this year. I have 4 months. And then I had a bad weekend. Wait, don't clap yet. You go, yay, 4 months. I'm like, no, not yet. I'll count you in. Another slip here. Okay, so this is May, and I had a really bad weekend. You know, things that the old timers tell you that make sense, like don't do certain stuff in the first year, don't do this. I didn't listen. I'm like, you know what? What do they know? So I did stuff that I wasn't supposed to do in a year. And it cost me, you know? It cost me. So I had slipped and I had taken some stuff. So then I took the stuff, and so you're supposed to call your sponsor before, right? That's the idea. You call them before you take it. So I took it, and then I called her. So I called her and said, you know, I just relapsed. I'm an idiot. I was crying. You know, I was devastated. I was a mess. So she tells me, okay, well, get rid of everything that you have in the house. You have anything? And I said, yeah, I do. She was, okay, we'll get rid of it. And I said, okay, hold on. So I put her on hold, and it's about a minute. And, you know, there's silence, right? So I get back on the phone, and she says, did you get rid of everything? And I said, I sure did. She goes, well, I didn't hear any sink or toilet or anything. And I said, that's because I took it all. And she said, that's not what I meant. I said, well, shit, why waste it, right? Like, I already took some shit that day. I might as well just, you know, I don't wait. That's wasteful. So after that, that's it. That's when I had surrendered. That was it. The day after, that was it. I had fully surrendered. I talked to my case manager and I told her what I had done. I thought that was the end. I thought I was going to get kicked out of my program. I thought, that's it. I can't do it. I told her on the phone, I cannot do this. I can't stay clean. It was 4 months and I can't do it. I can't do it. She says, stop telling me you cannot. Stop it. And I said, what do you want from me? I've used for 20 years. I've drank for 20 years. I can't do it. And she said, you won't do it, is what she's telling me. You won't. And I said, that's not true. And she said, then show me. She goes, show me what you have. She goes, I believe in you. She said, I believe in you. And I'm going to give you one more grace. She goes, one more grace. And I said, you're kidding. And she said, no. She said, one more grace. But let me remind you, if you F up again, that's it. So I said, okay, understood. So that's when I got on my knees and I said, this is it. This is it. I have no more grace and I don't expect any more grace. I've gotten more than I deserve. So then by that time, you know, I was looking for another sponsor. My other one was wonderful and I loved her very much. I really did. But I found this lady who inspired me when she talked, and she was happy all the time, all the time. I used to ask, you know, is she loaded? Because I said, she cannot be that happy sober. She just can't. And I don't believe it, and I'm going to drug test her. I mean it. They said, yeah, she's that happy all the time. And I said, well, I want some of that. I said, I need some of that, and I need to be happy without something being inside me. I said, I'm tired of always having to say, I need it, I need it. I don't want it anymore. So then I asked her if she would, you know, take me on, and she said yes. And we started working the steps since May. And diligently, I started working the steps because I thought it's do or die. And I really mean that. It was do or die. So I've been working the steps. I now am connected with people. I mean, who'd have thought? You know, first I hated this place, and now I love it. It's like home. It's my second family. I love everybody. You guys don't even know. You don't even know what you mean to me. I never thought that this place would be so wonderful to me and my friends that I've made here. You know, I didn't think that there was anybody like me. Like, you know, nobody had the problems that I had. Looking good on the outside, yeah, that's okay. But really, when you're a mess inside and you're just dying, who cares? Who freaking cares, you know? I was tired of it. I was like, you know, I gotta fix it. I gotta fix it before it takes me. So I'm working the steps. I'm on step 6. I'm trying to get through them, but she's just holding me back. She's giving me extra work, extra questions. But I admit, it's showing me something, and I'm learning something from every paragraph. And you know, I used to do it when I had time. Like, you know, my book was on my bed, and I would say, oh, if I have time to do that, I will, if I have time. You know, it says in the big book that delay is dangerous, and it is. So I can't afford to be delayed. So now it's a priority, and then if I have time, then I'll go do whatever I have to do. But that's a priority. Meeting with her is a priority. We go to meetings all the time. We go to meetings all the time. All the time. And I asked her if I could give her, like, my own phone, because I wanted my own number, but she said no, I'd have to use her number. But yeah, I call her a lot, and, you know, lately, you know, I feel stuff now. It's really weird. Like, I feel stuff where before I didn't feel anything. I was numbed emotionally, physically, spiritually. I was numbed. And now I'm learning how to deal with life. You know, I call her and I'm crying and I'm like, I feel this and, you know, what's wrong with me? And she's like, you're sad. I said, okay, but what do I do? Cry it out. I'm like, okay, well, what's wrong with me? You're feeling. I'm like, okay. I mean, just, you know, I mean, really, I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, really, I don't know what's going on sometimes. But that's okay, because, you know, I just, I'm a mess, but sober. My girls are used to me being, you know, more crying. But, you know, what just makes it all worth it is, you know, times like when they've all told me in their separate ways, you know, we love you, we loved you, you know, you were the perfect mom, you were amazing, but you're even more amazing now that you're sober. Just the other day we were in the store, we were in Winco, thousands of people around us, people pushing, just everything was just chaotic, and I was just just sitting around, just drinking my Starbucks, thinking, this is nice. And before, you would never have found me doing that because I was so wigged out all the time. I was wigged out all the time. The littlest crap would bother me. I would worry myself over nothing. And now, today, I can, okay, that's life. Like, deal with it, and it's okay. Winko was okay. She was throwing crap in the cart, and it was fun. It was fun, stuff like that. And she says, God, I love you sober. I love you sober. Just stuff like that, I don't know, it's just all worth it. It's all been worth it. If you're new and you're sitting here and you're scared and it feels uncomfortable where you have to be here, I know how you feel. I so know how you feel. But, if you go back out without doing anything about it, we'll see you back here for sure. Or you'll go to jail, or you'll go to prison, or you'll die. So I'm grateful that I'm here and I suggest that you look around because there's lots of people who at the beginning I thought were crazy because they wanted to be here. I thought, why would you want to be here? Well, now I know why you want to be here. It's to help the newcomer and to share your experience, that we can learn from stuff that you have went through that we can go through. And we have, an example to look after. No, all of you. Don't be pointing fingers. It's everybody. Everybody with time. Thank you guys for coming. Grab somebody you can relate to. Anybody. And just, don't be afraid to ask for help. I'm just going to leave you with that. Oh, my goodness. I know people are getting restless, but I'll just end it, by saying, ask for help, because I didn't and it almost killed me. Ask for help. Ask for help. Don't be ashamed. And work your program. That's important. And, here's just one thing I got out of the book today because I was working my steps. And I'll just leave you with this, okay? God did not designed man to destroy himself by alcohol, but he did give man instincts to help him stay alive. So I hope you find those instincts. Thank you for letting me know.